we all use different pillows. I found out online, on the internet, I searched and found out there are many materials that we use to make a pillow. I don't know what kind of pillow you use at home. I heard that there's actually, this one is a latex foam inside its beauty rest. There's also other types of pillows like feather pillows, down pillows. There's like micro bead pillows. What else are there? What else? Memory foam. Yeah, that's one of the new high-tech things. They say that NASA uses them in space shuttles. I don't know why would they need, why would they need a pillow if they're in space? Or they're just floating around, right? What other pillows are there? I actually use a buckwheat pillow at home. It's made of all the husks from buckwheat. I love it because it's kind of crunchy and it's cool. I don't like feather pillows or down pillows because they get my head really too hot. But I'm sure you all have a pillow. You all use a pillow, don't you? In fact, I think all cultures, most cultures actually have a pillow of their own. Everybody, all cultures have developed some sort of pillow because I realize it's not healthy to sleep without a pillow. Because somehow our head, our necks need that, there's that needs that pillow there because, unless you have a very big head. So you can lie flat. I mean, unless you're like Elmer Fudd or Betty Boop, you know, then you might not need a pillow. But most of us have smaller heads and we need a pillow. And I tried sleeping without a pillow, and it sometimes it's nice, but then you start snoring, right? And if you use too big a pillow, you start snoring too. Especially when I sleep on the side. If you don't have a pillow, it's very uncomfortable, right? When you look for a pillow, what do you look for? You look for memory? Memory foam? What's that? Oh, comfortable, yes. A pillow has to be soft and comfortable because you don't want to find like a jagged rock to use a pillow because it'll be very uncomfortable and you won't be able to sleep, right? Because you want something comfortable. What else are you looking for when you're looking for a pillow, though? Suitable for your head, so it's shaped like your head. Actually, that's right. When you're looking for a pillow, not only are you looking for something that is cuddly like this one, or soft or comfortable, what you're really looking for is for support. If you don't have the right kind of support, your head's going to, because sometimes people just think, oh, a pillow is just a pillow. I mean, I just want it to be something nice and comfortable. But if it's just too soft and too, like, blah, your head's just going to go like that when you sleep. It's not going to give you the support you need. When you're really looking for a pillow, not only do you want to find it to be comfortable, it has to give your head the support. True rest is like a pillow. Not only do you want it to be comfortable so that you can actually relax, it has to give your life support. And Jesus is saying, I am that true rest that you can have. You're not just looking for an absence of activity, an absence of work, so you can just kind of go like that. True rest gives your life support, gives you structure. True rest actually means that I have your head under control. You don't have to worry a thing. When somebody else is in control, when somebody is actually supporting your life, that is when you can really, truly rest. Jesus says, I am the true rest. Come with me. That is his first command. That's a secret to getting a longer vacation. Now, let's continue with the story. In verse 32, it says that Jesus and the disciples, since he said, come with me, let's go to a quiet place and get some rest, they get onto a boat, and Jesus and his disciples go on a sort of like a cruise. However, in verse 33, you would notice that the crowd saw that Jesus had sailed off with the disciples, and they started to run on foot. They ran. And they got there ahead of Jesus and the disciples. It's just a picture of this. It's like weird. I mean, Jesus got into a boat with these disciples. They started rowing. And this crowd saw that they were leaving. And they started like sprinting around the side of the lake and got there before Jesus got there. Now, maybe they're really good runners. Or maybe Jesus took his time and disciples, or maybe they faced headwind. But for some reason, they actually landed on the place, and the crowd was already there. Now, if you were one of the disciples, what would have been your reaction? It's like, wait, you again? We sailed away just to get away from you, and now you're here again? What would you have done? I would have told Jesus, let's sail back. Let's go to the other side. Like, you would want to get away from this crowd of people because these were the people who actually made your life so complicated, made your life so busy, you didn't even have a time to eat. But what happens here? What happens next? What does Jesus do? Instead of dismissing the crowd and saying, you guys go home, we did not come all the way here just to see you guys again. Jesus saw them, and in verse 34 it says, Jesus had compassion on them. Because Jesus saw that they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he started teaching them. Now imagine if you were one of the disciples, what would have been going through your mind? Now Jesus promised to go on a vacation with you. And when he lands, he sees these people and he leaves you behind and starts teaching them. It's kind of like when you go on a family vacation and your dad brings not just a cell phone, he brings his laptop. Yeah, it's kind of like that. When your family goes on vacation, your dad or your mom brings a laptop with them, and instead of just going out, they always stay in the hotel room, like typing away. Or they actually they say, okay, we'll go to the pool because they still have a Wi-Fi hotspot there. But never mind going anywhere else because your dad has his laptop with him. It's kind of like that. Jesus didn't leave the work. He got there and he actually worked some more. Now, if you were the disciples, if I were one of the disciples, I would have been pretty upset. But we actually look at this passage, they were pretty good sports. They didn't complain. They stayed with Jesus. Jesus taught them. Towards the end of the day, verses 35 and 36, the disciples suggested to Jesus, hey, it's getting late. These people are tired. They're hungry. They've run all this way here. Now it's getting late, and there's no food. Send them away so they can go to the villages and buy some food. But what does Jesus say to them? Now, this is the second imperative. Jesus says, you give them something to eat. Now, if I were one of the disciples, I would have been really upset. Okay? Not only did Jesus work on the vacation, he brought his laptop with him. He's now making me work. He's making the disciples work. When the disciples had been so busy doing all this before, Jesus now says, not only would I be working, you give them something to eat. I think Jesus is really checking their motives. The disciples had been working for Jesus supposedly all this time and going about back and forth, even going without food. Jesus says, come with me and get some rest. And now Jesus asks them to work some more. What is the meaning of this? And in order for us to understand how to actually achieve eternal vacations, so that vacation is not only limited to our summers, we have to realize, why do we work? Why, and specifically, why do we hate work so much? Why do people hate work? Why do kids hate school? We have to ask ourselves why we work. And I think Jesus here is checking us, our motivations for work. Why do we work in the first place? And why do people burn up or burn out at work or in school? I think we burn out because we work for the wrong reasons. I think we burn out and we get tired and we get sick of work and school because we study and we work for the wrong reasons and for the wrong purposes. The book of James says, you ask and you don't receive because you ask with wrong motives, to spend what you get on your own selfish pleasures. That's why God doesn't give that to you. Oftentimes we work and we study for the wrong reasons, to spend what we get on ourselves. when work was actually ordained by God. Did you know that God created work? In the very beginning, God put the man in the garden. It says, your job is to till the ground and to be a gardener. It was so supposed to be life-enriching. It was so supposed to be meaningful and purposeful. And people are supposed to find meaning and purpose in doing this work that's ordained by God. But somehow along the line, sin crept in. And of course, we know of the fall of mankind. And along with it, work. God actually cursed the ground. So that work now becomes a toil, becomes a chore, becomes labor. When work in the beginning was fine and good. Now I think here Jesus is actually redefining work and checking the hearts of those who work for him. Jesus had compassion. It says that Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on the people. The word compassion comes from, it's very rarely used in the Bible. The original Greek word is very rarely used. It's only used here in this context when Jesus saw the crowds before he fed them. Also used in one other place where the Good Samaritan saw the guy who got beat up. It said that he had compassion on him. The word compassion really comes from the word, it's kind of even hard to pronounce, splagnon. It means the spleen or means the bowels, the gut. The word compassion really means moved in the bowels, like a bowel movement. It really means a deep-seated feeling. When you see something and you're just so moved from the inside out, not just like a head knowledge will say, oh, I see a need there, but it's a need that you see from the inside. It said that Jesus saw these people, he had a compassion for the people. So I think here Jesus is checking his followers, both then and here. What moves your bowels? Why do you work? What motivates you to work? Now, I know what moves my bowels. Oatmeal moves my bowels. I'm actually talking about food. Food moves me from the inside out because I have so much compassion to fill my tummy. I have so much compassion to fill my life with things and pleasures and trips and fun people and good stuff. I have to realize and I have to learn that actually oftentimes I work because I want to benefit. It's all about me. Here Jesus is actually redefining work and says, work is not about you. Work is about the one who's given work for you to do. True to our theme for the year, good and faithful, we as a church are learning what it means to be a steward, to be somebody who's entrusted by God with work, with money, with time. These are to be used for his purposes, not for ours. Here Jesus is asking, you give them. He's calling us again to work. But this work has to be related to him. Because we were told, it would be absurd for somebody to call Jesus Lord when our hearts do not have the same passion in the heart of our Lord. Just like if when I first met my wife, Wayne, I was a carnivore. A carnivore meaning I did not eat vegetables. I only liked meat. I only liked steaks. I love sushi and all that stuff. But my wife is a herbivore. Well, she's an omnivore, but she loves vegetables. And every time we go out for a meal, or she would comment on how her family used to like buy like a couple pounds of vegetables, and they would just eat all that in one meal. I wouldn't even be able to comprehend that because I just don't like vegetables that much. But she loves vegetables, and she would not understand why I would like raw fish, because to her, you know, that's something that's not even edible. Fish has to be cooked because that's how she grew up. But as we actually started to see each other and fell in love, we realized that if she loves vegetables so much, I got to learn what it means to appreciate vegetables. And in the same token, she started learning to appreciate raw fish. So that nowadays, when we go out for a meal, we always order vegetables, and I would just kind of fight with her for the vegetables. And every week, once in a week, we would probably go out for sushi, and because that's her way of just kind of paying me back. And we would go out and have sushi every once a week, and she would actually learn to appreciate sushi as well. We always learn the things that the people we love love. We learn to love the things the people we love love. Here we see Jesus, his heart, his compassion is on people. And he's charging those who follow him to have the same compassion for people. Jesus is redefining work and saying that work comes from God. That work has to be for God. You give them. It's the same as the Great Commission. Basically, Jesus is saying that all work, whether you are an IT professional, whether you're an engineer, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a student, all work is about people. He actually redefines work that all work has to be connected with God's passion for the world. In fact, that is sometimes a rule of thumb I apply when somebody asks me, hey, should I go into ministry? Because lately there have been people who say, I want to go to seminary. Pastor Ian, what do you think? First of all, I'm thinking, oh man, I have to split my paycheck with another person. Okay, one day. Okay, but I'm thinking, okay, is this person really cut out for ministry? One of the things I would really ask is, do you have a love for people? Has God given you a love for people? Do you really actually have that same compassion for people? And if the answer I hear is somebody who actually wants to go to seminary, wants to become a pastor, and all it is about fulfilling themselves, finding themselves, their identity, and has no connection with loving people, I would probably have to say to the person, wait a little bit. See where God is leading you in your passion, your compassion, leading your bowels to move. Because that has everything to do with your work. Has everything to do with your stewardship. In the same manner, I encourage all the young people. When you go to school, who are you really studying for? And all the people who are in professions or working at home, when you work, who do you really work for? Because who you work for, who you study for, will determine what your work is like. Because when we work for ourselves, when we study for ourselves, one day we will earn our paychecks and we will actually use all that money on ourselves. That kind of a work one day will disillusion you. Indeed, you will enjoy your paycheck. You enjoy buying all these toys for yourself and you feel like, wow, I'm on the top of the game. I have all this money in the world coming to me and I can spend it the way I want. But in the end, it leads to meaninglessness. In the end, you are living your life just for yourself. There's nothing higher. There's nothing even more noble. But God-focused work is different. You're taking commands, you're taking orders from God, and he tells you why you need to do things, when you have to do things, and for what purpose you're doing these things. For his glory, there is more noble, a higher aim, a higher purpose. That kind of work will never be tiresome because you answer to him. When you work for yourself, you answer to yourself. That is why so many people burn out. That is why so many people find no meaning in their work. They'll find no meaning in their studies. You give them. Isn't the way God's telling us about the greatness of the Great Commission? Mother Teresa, whose 100th birthday we celebrated a few days ago, and for some of you, you probably don't even know who she is, but she is this great woman who lived and served in India for so many years and giving her life just for the poor in Calcutta. She says this, I am a little pencil in the hand of a writing God who is sending a love letter to the world. I am just a little pencil in the hand of a writing God who is sending a love letter to the world. We have to see and we have to understand this is what motivates Mother Teresa in her work. She sees that her work is part of God's hand in reaching the world because God has His compassion for people. Of course, we look at this Jesus' command here. You give them something to eat. It was also a test. It was also a test to see how many people really did come to Jesus, to have Jesus as their source of rest. Because with Jesus, we can do a lot of things. Without Jesus, we can do zip. So in a way, when Jesus told His disciples, you give those people something to eat, Jesus was giving them a test to see how many of them really knew the secret of God-ordained work. In John 15:5, Jesus says this, I'm the vine.
I'm divine. You are the branches.
Okay. Jesus says, I'm the vine, you're the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. So when Jesus told the disciples to go and feed the people, you give them something to eat, he was basically giving them a test to see who were really actually had Jesus, connected with Jesus, and who are the people who are actually not connected because they can do nothing. Now, what was the response of the people, of the disciples? They said, hey, we don't have anything to give to these people. And from the text, you actually see that there were 5,000 men plus women and children. There's probably like a 10,000 people there. And the disciples said, we don't have that kind of money. Even if we did, would we actually pay for bread to feed all that people? They said, 8 months' salary cannot buy enough bread. Now, how much money is that? Now, let's try to calculate that. In your NIV, your footnote says 200 denarii. And that's how the NIV editors translated that as 8 months' wages. 200 denarii. One denarius was the common wage for a laborer back in those days. Now, let's try to calculate how much money that would be equivalent to today. And I try to find out what's the minimum wage these days. Yesterday, somebody told me it was $7.15, something like that, in New Jersey. Now, if you actually calculate that, and let's say a laborer works for 8 hours a day, or maybe a little bit less. Let's say they make $50 a day. Multiply that by 200, because a denarius, remember, was a wage for one day. So multiply 50 by 200. That's roughly $10,000. To feed that many people, about 10,000 people, even if it cost $1 per person, it would cost $10,000. And the disciples said, how are we going to find that kind of money? And isn't it interesting whenever God tells us to do something, oftentimes than not, we say no rather than yes. We say we can't rather than we say we can. We always ask why instead of saying why not. We as humans always look at all the impossibilities. We're pessimists. We always look at the cup as half empty instead of half full. Was it an impossible task? Let's read on. Verse 38. This is where Jesus says his last statement and contains the third principle for us in order to achieve eternal vocations. Jesus says, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. That's the third imperative, the third command here. Go and see. How many loaves do they have? You know the answer. Yeah, just tell me. Throw the answer. Five loaves and... Now, if you were to go and see, how much would you have found? Same, right? Five loaves and two fish. You just go around and ask people, hey, who brought lunch? And somebody says, I didn't bring lunch. Hey, who brought lunch? We didn't bring anything. Who brought lunch? In the Gospel of John, it records that a little boy had five loaves and two fish. So it's like, a little kid, say, hey, kid, give me your lunch. Okay, so he'll give him his lunch, five loaves and two fish. So if you actually went and saw, Jesus says, go and see. Go look around. What are your resources? How much would you find? 5 loaves and 2 fish. I propose to you, ladies and gentlemen, that their assessment was wrong. I propose to you that the disciples were wrong in that answer. All they found was 5 loaves and 2 fishes. How are you supposed to feed 10,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes? But they did. Because they not only had 5 loaves, they had 6 loaves. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry. He who believes in me will never be thirsty. Go and see. Look around. What are your resources? And God's word says to you and me today, go and see. What do you have? Do you only have 5 loaves and 2 fishes? Most of us look at our lives and say, I don't have anything. God tells me to work for him. I don't have anything. I'm just a kid. Or I'm kind of stupid. I only scored like 1,300 in my SATs. Go and see. If you only have 5 loaves, you can do nothing. You can do nothing. You cannot even feed 1 person with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. That's why it was a little boy's peasant lunch. But the 6th loaf. The 6th loaf is what does a miracle. If you have the 6th loaf in your life, you will do miracles. Go and see if you have that 6th loaf in your life. Well, if you go and see, if you went and saw, would you even find that 6th loaf in your life? Because Jesus was right there. And they were looking around and they saw all these people who brought nothing and only found 5 loaves and 2 fish. They did not find that 6th loaf that actually gave them the answer to feeding the crowds. Go and see. Now, this is the 3rd secret to eternal vacation. What are your resources? Do you only look forward to those 2 weeks in a year where you can just go and play and be mindless and amuse yourself? Or do you actually look to the source, the one who actually gives you eternal rest, who gives you that support in life? And we say, oh, yeah, I'll just do that 2 weeks in a year. Well, come on. Jesus says every day you can come to that source and drink deeply and eat to have your full. And yet we look down on Bible reading. I'm saying not just to you. I'm saying that to myself. God's word actually condemns me as well. How good are you in studying the Bible every day? Or communicating with God through prayer and praise? I have to admit to you, sometimes to me it's a chore. It's an obligation. So I would just kind of flip through the Bible a little bit and pray, oh God, thank you for the meal. Thank you for sleep. All right, and go to sleep. When in fact it is your mini vacation. That is the time when you get in touch with the 6th loaf. The 6th loaf where it gives you power and energy and strength to go through the rest of your life. That is where the mini vacation is every day of your life. Mother Teresa also said this. If you want a love message to be heard, it has got to be sent out. To keep a lamp burning, we have to keep putting oil in it. Mother Teresa is saying that you are a love letter. If you want to people don't know that God is love, you got to go out and tell people. But you cannot go out and tell people if your lamp is not lit. If your lamp has no oil in it, it will not burn. So you have to keep putting oil in your lamp. And the sad fact is, my brothers and sisters, we do not put oil in our lamps because it becomes tedious. It's just routine. We don't want to spend time with God every day because we have other things to do. We're so busy, 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 so our lamps go out. Keep that lamp burning. Don't let it go out because that is your vacation. That is where your rest comes in. Now, let's just close this out. We've been going too long on this. But perhaps if you're feeling like, hey, I'm one of those disciples and I still feel cheated because Jesus promised me a vacation, now I'm here working. And you're still thinking Jesus cheated these people, Jesus was unfair, then let me ask you one question. What was the original purpose of that vacation? Why did Jesus say, come with me to a quiet place and get some rest? Why? Because they didn't have time to eat, right? Remember that? And to me, that's a big problem. And I know that our birthday boy, Thomas, he works very hard, and I follow his example to work very hard. He works very hard, and we've worked at a couple of conventions together. And I see this guy burning the midnight oil all the time. He actually doesn't sleep. He just works and works and works. This guy doesn't look for sleep. All that would sustain him is a rice box from Chinatown. And that's what he does. He would always just go to, like, send somebody to Chinatown, bring back all these, like, styrofoam boxes of, like rice dishes, and he would just give it to all his staff, you know, and as long as they have food, they will work. I'm kind of like that, too. I can't go to bed, even as tired as I may be, I cannot go to bed on an empty stomach. Food is very important for me because it sustains me and keeps me alive. Jesus said, you did not have enough food. You didn't have time to eat. We're going to rest. And how much food did the disciples have? Nothing. They had nothing. When Jesus asked, go and see, what did you have? They grabbed a boy's lunch. All right, so the disciples did not have anything. But after this miracle, let's look at verse 43. How much food did they have left? They had 12 basketfuls of broken bread and fish that they picked up from all these people who finished eating. Now, I don't think the number 12 is an arbitrary number here. For one reason, it's because all these disciples, they carried these baskets. It's kind of like a backpack. It's like a basket where you put your money and your clothes and your sandals, your Game Boys, you know, as you walk around just preaching the good news. It said that they actually filled their baskets with enough food so that it's actually filled up. So what was the original reason why they went on a vacation? To eat. In the end, they get to eat. Not only do they get to eat, they get to experience this great miracle performed by their master. Understanding that Jesus was not just a preacher. No. He was not just a healer. No. He could make food almost out of nothing. He could take something so small and so insignificant and feed the masses and the world and you and me. And herein lies a spiritual secret, Christians. In feeding, we are fed. In serving, we are served. Oftentimes we just feel like, oh, God's just using me. Or Pastor Ian's just using me because, no, he's beating me up and making me clean the mess I created. Or Pastor Jeff is using me because I don't want to be in a small group. I don't want to be doing all these things, but he's just using me. We feel that God is sometimes just using us. And we don't understand why he says, wax on and wax off. Right? Or in the newer version, like, take off your jacket, put on your jacket, take off your jacket, put on your jacket. We always feel that it's unreasonable. Why is God telling me to wax on and wax off? But when we are feeding, we are being fed. When we are serving, we are being served. That is the spiritual principle here in this text. Lest we feel that God is using us and we feel that our lives are just wasted in serving people and doing stuff, in doing so, we are connected with the source, with true rest. True rest is not the absence of labor. It's not the absence of activity. It's finding support for your life. So Jesus says, come with me. With Jesus, we find that true support and we can let go and truly rest. Jesus says, you give them. You give them something to eat. Jesus is telling us to find the right attitude in our work, in our school, in our studies. Find the right attitude. Know who you are serving, why you're doing all this stuff. And Jesus says, go and see. Christians, let's go and see and examine our hearts to see if we even have that sixth loaf in our lives. If not, we need to reconnect. Now, I'll just close out this time by sharing you these words by St. Augustine in his Confessions. You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you. Let's pray. God.